Our next case this morning is United States against Egwuoje.
May it please the court, my name is Andrew Bach and it's my pleasure to be here today representing Mr. Benjamin Egwuoje on appeal. If I may, I'd like to spend my time today addressing the first issue we raised in our brief, Mr. Egwuoje's waiver of his right to counsel. The entire exchange between the district court and Mr. Egwuoje regarding his right to counsel took place the first morning of trial and lasted only a matter of minutes. During this exchange...
Well, that wasn't the only exchange he had with the defendant in this case, was it? Person to person, Judge Zagel to Mr. Egwuoje. He talked to him many times during the course of the pretrial proceedings.
Certainly. That was the only discussion of a potential waiver of the right to counsel.
Well, I understand that, but he had a fair idea of this particular defendant, and having spoken with him numerous times prior to the time that he purportedly asked to represent himself, did he not?
Yes, he had interacted with the district court on numerous occasions before the day of trial.
So that provides some context to the statements that you're about to get into right now.
Certainly. During that morning exchange, the district court and Mr. Egwuoje repeatedly interrupted each other. During that exchange, Mr. Egwuoje was attempting to advance an argument in favor of a motion for a continuance. Despite the fact that the district court was clearly aware that Mr. Egwuoje's attention was focused on his motion for a continuance, the district court pressed Mr. Egwuoje to make a decision on the spot whether or not to proceed without counsel.
How many lawyers did he had prior to that time?
Mr. Halperin, who was his attorney that was discharged the morning of trial, was his third attorney.
Mr. Bach, this court, unlike, for instance, the Sixth Circuit, has never mandated to the district courts in our circuit any particular script for Feretta invocation. And not having done so, it seems to me that, as Judge Kaney suggests, Judge Zagel was entitled to draw on his general knowledge of this particular person and was certainly entitled to make a credibility determination about whether he really was surprised that it was really the trial date or not. Judge Zagel plainly didn't believe that. And in general, figure the guy's determined. I've told him it's a really silly thing to do, but the Supreme Court, for better or for worse, has said this is what can be. Not many of us on the bench, I suspect, are huge fans of every aspect of the Feretta rule, since it's usually such a bad thing for people, but there it is.
Sure. Certainly. We're not suggesting that with a certain list of warnings or the bench book questions are the touchstone of a knowing and intelligent waiver. And indeed, as Judge Easterbrook suggested in United States versus Hill, those questions do not necessarily evince an understanding of the dangers of proceeding pro se. What we think the error in this case was the district court's failure to slow Mr. Egwuoje down, and if nothing else, separate the issue of continuance from the issue of proceeding pro se. So, as this court stated in United States versus Ore, the key is, if nothing else, a district court must ensure the defendant knows his right and avoids making
a
hasty decision.
Well, there's certainly an inference here. He was getting a lot of counseling and advice from his colleagues at the Metropolitan Correctional Center.
Certainly. He mentioned afterward that they were providing legal advice, yes. If anything, in our view, that cuts in favor of the idea that Mr. Egwuoje clearly had a very little understanding of the benefits of counsel.
Well,
at least very bad judgment to accept the legal advice of the people who weren't capable of staying out of jail.
Certainly. We're not suggesting that.
One thing we know is that they weren't very good at giving legal advice to themselves.
Certainly. We're not suggesting that whether or not there's a knowing and intelligent waiver turns on whether it was a good decision. I think it's quite clear from the transcripts it was not in this case. What we think was required, and we think it's not too much to ask to protect Mr. Agualje's right to counsel in this instance, was simply for the district court to separate the issue of continuance from the issue of proceeding pro se.
But what if the district court thought that they were not separate issues in Mr. Agualje's mind, and that Mr. Agualje, given the pattern he displayed so far, was invoking these rights precisely so that he could get an extra 30 days, an extra 60 days, an extra week, whatever he could squeeze out of Judge Zagel. The judge is first trying to say, look, whether you have this lawyer or whether you don't have this lawyer, the schedule's the schedule. So make your decision on that basis. I'm looking at the reproduction in your brief at page 5. I think that's what he's trying to get through.
Certainly, in the district court's mind, the issue of continuance and the issue of proceeding pro se were closely intertwined. But the importance...
The problem is it's in the mind of many prisoners when they come in. If they can shift from one lawyer to another at the last minute, they'll have an additional time that bad things won't happen to them, as in this case.
Sure. Well, we think there are two things that militate against finding knowing an intelligent waiver on these facts. First, Mr. Agualje got in an argument with Mr. Halperin in the morning of trial, so we're not necessarily sure this was true for strategic reasons, but even if that's true, even if you accept the idea that he was doing this simply to buy himself more time, in United States versus Sandals, this court found that the waiver was not knowing intelligent, even after this court accepted the district court's finding that the defendant was basically trying to do this for gamesmanship. So that fact alone does not mean that the waiver was knowing and intelligent. What we think is really the touchstone or the important issue in this case is avoiding making hasty decisions, which this court has warned against on several occasions. And we think that this is a textbook hasty decision. The defendant repeatedly interrupts the district court and vice versa. We're not arguing that the district court was not justified.
Now, but Mr. Bach, if your argument is accepted, any defendant who wants to play games with the process in order to get extra time is entitled to more extra time as a matter of law, because preventing him from playing games with the process is, by definition, hasty.
Well, not necessarily, Your Honor. In this situation,
everybody
we think...
Most defendants would love to tie the court up in knots, but to say that it is constitutionally required to take a time out, give him more time to think about it, in a world where the witnesses are in the courtroom and everybody's ready to go, is a constitutional entitlement to inconvenience the witnesses, to hope they won't show up the next day. It's just what people who want to monkey with the trial want.
Well, we're not suggesting that the court needed to grant a continuance in this instance to deal with the Feretta issue.
You're arguing that as a matter of law, the court had to grant a continuance.
Well, we think that's a separate issue in terms of the abuse of discretion, but we're not suggesting that there needed to be a separate Feretta hearing in this instance to decide whether he needed to proceed per se. We're simply suggesting that perhaps a 5 to 10 minute break would have been necessary here to make sure the defendant was focused on the issue of right to counsel. We don't think that this court's previous case law suggests that the defendant can be continue to interrupt the judge and there'll be no protection for the district court. We simply think that the district court needs to ensure that Mr. Agualje, in this instance, was focused on the issue of counsel, not the issue of the continuance. And in terms of whether or not when you compare shortly after the waiver, the purported waiver in this case, the district court did grant a break to see if Mr. Agualje could proceed in absentia as a pro se defendant. We think that a small break in this instance to allow Mr. Agualje to calm himself down after his argument with his counsel, to focus on the issue of waiving his right to counsel, not the issue of the continuance, would have allowed him to make a knowing and intelligent waiver. As the district court failed to do so, we believe the waiver was not knowing and intelligent. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Bach. Mr. Harvey.
Mr. Bach, honorable judges, may it please the court, Brian Havey on behalf of the United States. Mr. Agualje was never denied the opportunity for counsel, never not once. This was not about access to an attorney. This was about a man who was looking for an attorney that would tell him what he wanted to hear. Your Honors, the record could not be any clearer as to what Mr. Igualdi's intent was. He wasn't on the fence about this. He told Judge Zagel, I want to go pro se. He told Judge Zagel, and these were his words, why are you forcing this man on me? Referring to Mr. Halpern. I don't even know why he's standing here. He after telling this to the judge, Judge Zagel told him, Mr. Halpern's going to be here anyway. If you need help, you can go see him. You can seek advice. He's going to be here. And Mr. Halpern was there the whole trial. Mr. Igualdi, on his own, decided that he's going to represent himself and not speak to counsel. Mr. Halpern, who I know, Your Honor, is a very experienced criminal defense attorney.
Was he at counsel table during the trial, do you know?
He was, Your Honor. I don't know if he was sitting directly. I can't recall if he was right next to Mr. Igualdi.
But inside the bar, though.
He was in the courtroom the whole trial and at sentencing. Even though Judge Zagel didn't ask him to be there, he was there for sentencing as well. Whether this decision was made on the morning of trial, Your Honor, or whether it was hasty, I think you should look at the whole course of behavior as you were talking about here before. This was something that was going on for months. This just didn't begin that morning. And Judge Zagel, at that point, had the right to put his foot down. And in his judgment, which was a reasonable judgment, what is going to change if I give you another 2 weeks or another 2 months? And as we're standing here today, what is his defense? What witnesses is he going to offer? What research is he going to be done? We still haven't heard any of that from Mr. Igualdi. This request was symbolic at best. It had no substance to it.
Was he indicating, I should have asked this of Mr. Buck, that he was going to call any witnesses other than these family members he mentioned?
Mr. Igualdi never once mentioned a single witness who could offer any relevant testimony. Even his wife, his ex-wife, his kids, his ex-girlfriend, those are the only people he mentioned, and they couldn't conceivably, Judge, have offered any relevant testimony. They weren't there. The family lives out in California. The girlfriend lives in Massachusetts. They had nothing to do with this case. He was dissembling. He had no reason to ask for a continuance. And Judge Zagel's findings were correct, and he did the right thing. Mr. Igualdi was given a fair trial. He had access to an experienced attorney. He confronted the government's witnesses. And Judge, he knew this case. He knew this case probably better than anybody in the courtroom.
But he did make the usual sort of laundry list of mistakes, I take it. He was interrupting. He was not
cross-examining
well.
He did that at his peril. And Judge Zagel told him that was going to happen.
Of course, the big problem in these cases is that if you tell the fool that he is about to have a fool for a client, one of the problems of being a fool is that you don't understand that.
That's true, Your Honor, but I know it's not my place to ask questions. What more should Judge Zagel have said to this man? He was pugnacious. He wasn't going to listen to anything he said.
But that's actually a very important legal question, because you could imagine a legal regime in which a Feretta demand should be granted only to people who demonstrate some higher level of competency, who have a certain level of education, who are literate, who have, you know, the various things that the bench book inquiries are going for. That's one possible legal regime. Another possible legal regime is anybody who isn't mentally incompetent to stand trial, however limited they may be in other ways, is entitled to invoke this Feretta right if they make a request. Another regime you could imagine is no Feretta request has to be granted unless it's made 60 days before the trial or more. I mean, there are all kinds of things, and I suppose part of our question is how rigorous are those requirements? Because Judge Zagel does clearly advise Mr. Igualdi, this is a stupid thing to do, don't do it, you'll regret it, et cetera, but he doesn't go through a more elaborate inquiry.
Your Honor, my understanding of the Supreme Court precedent is that the competency is to waive the right, not the competency to represent yourself adequately. And the Supreme Court has said that's not a basis for finding that the defendant's decision was not informed. Here we have factors that is, he's got this extensive criminal history. This is not the first time this man has been in a courtroom before. It may be his first federal criminal trial. I have no way of knowing that. But this guy had a criminal history going back 15 years. He had been in a lot of courtrooms before. Case law states that if there's evidence of manipulation, that shows that the defendant knows what he's doing, which is what Judge Zagel found here. This was not a dumb guy. You know, his English may not have been perfect, but he sure sounded intelligent, Judge. And I believe he knew what he was doing, and Judge Zagel believed that he knew what he was doing. And again, I keep coming back to this. Judge Zagel gave the guy three attorneys. He had the opportunity to consult with Mr. Halpern. He repeatedly refused to talk to him. And I believe that was a strategic choice on his part, and Judge Zagel believed that was a strategic choice on his part. At the end of the day, the defendant got a fair trial, in my opinion. The jury verdict was reliable. And even Mr. Igualdi himself admitted that at sentencing. He told the judge, "I'm guilty of this," at that point, expressing remorse, hoping for a lenient sentence. He knew the right things to say at the right time, Judge. And unless there's any questions, Your Honor, I would stand on our brief on the remaining issues and ask that you affirm the judgment of conviction and the sentence imposed by Judge Zagel in this case.
Thank you, Mr. Beatty. Okay. Anything further, Mr. Bach?
I'd like to make two quick points. First, in response to Mr. Havey's question about what else the district court could have done in this instance, we would simply suggest that the district court was obligated to follow this court's standard and precedent in Ore and in Hill, suggesting that the key is the defendant knows his rights and, more importantly here, does not make a hasty decision. The government offers no response to our contention that this was a textbook example of a hasty decision. Mr. Igualdi pressed to make a decision on the spot, the morning of trial, whether to proceed pro se, even while it was clear he was focused on a separate issue. The second point is that the government offers, both here today and in their brief, the speculation that Mr. Igualdi would not have been dissuaded by any amount of warning or a greater inquiry would not have encouraged him not to proceed pro se. Well, first off, I think as we respond in our reply brief, that's merely speculation. We simply don't know that. But as a legal matter, it's irrelevant. There's no support for the idea that there's no obligation to ensure a knowing and intelligent waiver where we might think after the fact he might have represented himself anyway. For the reasons we discussed in our brief and we've advanced here today, we respectfully request that you reverse Mr. Igualdi's conviction and remand for a new trial. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Bach, and we appreciate your willingness and that actually of Ms. Mears to undertake the appointment. Mr. Harcourt, please give our thanks to Ms. Mears as well. The case is under advisement.